Hi, welcome to the Growth.me summary of the 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. The 4-Hour Workweek is about building a passive income business so we can escape the usual 40-hour workweek. Tim Ferriss also shows how we can improve our productivity by embracing the 80-20 rule, strict deadlines, automation, and outsourcing. Looking at the online reviews for this book, on Amazon, it had 4.5 stars, and on Goodreads, it had 3.9 stars. There were many positive reviewers who found the ideas fascinating, challenging to their old ways of thinking, and useful for streamlining productivity. But there were some critical reviewers who did not like the author's self-promotional tone and believe the ideas are unrealistic for everyone to follow. So let's begin. Ha ha, yeah right, laughed my close family member when they saw me reading the 4-Hour Workweek at the age of 17. It just seemed hard to believe, like a scam promise. I mean, most people work at least 40 hours per week. Both of my parents are small business owners who work 80 plus hours per week. But at that time I was 17. Fast forward 3 years later, and I'm traveling around Southeast Asia. I have a website that provides me a full-time income, even while I'm traveling, and I can manage it from my MacBook Pro anywhere in the world. And yeah, sometimes I was working 4 hours a week, because when you're staying near beautiful tropical beaches in southern Thailand for $15 a night, then you want to make the most of that time. Drink some mango smoothies, go snorkeling, meet other backpackers, have some fun. So when I say this book changed my life, I'm not exaggerating. But can it do the same for other people too, like you? Well, many people hate their jobs. If they won the lottery, they would never come to work again. But it feels like we have no other choice. After all, isn't everyone trapped in the same 9-to-5 rat race? Well, the 4-Hour Workweek explains an alternative path, a path we could take to design our own lifestyles rather than following social norms and expectations. Is everyone going to be as successful as Tim, or successful at all with this approach? Definitely not. Entrepreneurship is always risky, and we all know that. But from this book, we can all learn how to improve our odds of success in online business by following Tim's tips for market research, product testing, and online sales. We can also become more productive in our career or side hustle or business by learning how to eliminate, automate, and outsource much of our work. And we can also think unconventionally about our future and about our work, because the first step to designing our ideal lifestyle is hearing stories from others who have done it successfully. Then it stops feeling impossible. Are you excited to get started? I sure am, so let's go. First, who is Tim Ferriss? He's a serial entrepreneur, top podcaster, and New York Times best-selling author of many books. He was also an early investor in startups like Uber, Shopify, Facebook, Twitter, and dozens more. But many years ago, when Tim first graduated university at Princeton, his life was kind of depressing. He spent months looking for a job after graduation, finally landing a sales position at a small startup where he spent 12 miserable hours every day calling people. And after that, he launched his first business, which was a sports nutrition supplement company called Brain Quicken. And he used just a few $1,000s of his money, and he spent a few months studying business extensively for learning how to do it. And lucky for him, that business took off in a big way, allowing him to quit his job and travel the world. So let's begin with lesson one from this book, escape normal. Many social conventions are irrational and misguided. I've always found it fascinating that we live in a society with so many strange conventions that people never question. Like, why do almost all university degrees need exactly 4 years to learn the knowledge? Why not 2 years for some degrees and 5 years for others? I mean, I know that master's degrees exists, but like 90 plus 95% of degrees are exactly 4 years. How can it be possible that you need exactly the same number of hours to learn history as you do physics or literature or engineering? Or, why do almost all jobs require exactly 40 hours every week to do? So, this book begins with the surprising title, The 4-Hour Workweek, because Tim Ferriss wants us to re-examine the hidden social rules that we are following. What invisible assumptions do me and you live by without even realizing it, such as the 4-year degree and the 40-hour workweek? Now, there's a professor of psychology named Robert Cialdini, who is the author of the famous book Influence. He says one of the most powerful principles of interpersonal influence is called social proof. And that means when we see other people doing something, especially high status people or great numbers of people, then we automatically want to copy them. We assume that if many other people are doing something, then it must be the right thing to do. Social proof is why some marketing techniques are effective, like celebrity endorsements, customer testimonials, or positive online reviews. It's why when a star basketball player wears a certain type of shoe, then everyone seems to want them too. And it's why we tend to wear the same clothes as other people in our social groups or even in our country, and to follow the career paths that are shown to us by authorities in schools. So that all comes down to different principles of influence, and that one is called social proof. You can learn more great ideas related to psychology and marketing in our summary of the book Influence by Robert Cialdini on growth.me. But let's get back to the 4-hour workweek. To overcome the pressure to follow the crowd, we must practice lifestyle design. That is Tim's name for writing down exactly what we want our life to look like in the future. That's called lifestyle design. Although that sounds so obvious, most of us never do take the time to clarify. What do we really want our typical day to look like in 1 year, 3 years, and 5 years? I mean, not just like a fuzzy desire, but putting down on paper exactly how many rooms you want your apartment or house to have, what kind of car you want to be driving, where you want to go for a trip, what you want to be doing, what kind of friends you want to have, etc. When we are clear on what we want, then we will make decisions that move us towards our desired lifestyle much more effectively. Like, I wanted to have the freedom to travel the world for months at a time, so I chose then to research online business opportunities and found ways of making money from my laptop. Other people may want something different. They may want to be deeply involved in their local community, for example. So they may actually want a business or career that keeps them firmly rooted in one place and involved in the community. So it's very important to know what kind of lifestyle we desire. So Tim's goal setting tips are quite simple to follow. I've broken it all down into 2 steps. These are chapters of the book, simplified into 2 steps. Step 1 is to write down several things you want in the next 2 years. Tim recommends thinking about our goals in 3 different categories: what we want to be, skills, what we want to do, experiences, and what we want to have, which is possessions. So, for example, you may want to become great at cooking Indian food, you may want to visit the Grand Canyon, and you may want to buy a lakefront home. So that's what you want to be, do, and have. The 2nd step is to calculate exactly how much that would cost you per month. Add up all of those things that you want, and then figure out exactly what each thing would cost you monthly. And don't start to get intimidated if it's a big number, because we're just dreaming at this point. That number is your TMI, or target monthly income. That is your dream transformed into a concrete and definite number that you can now shoot for. So to summarize this lesson, we can escape social conformity through lifestyle design. That is, writing down exactly what we want our life to look like in 2 years, 3 years, maybe 5 years in the future. Make a list of what you want to be, do, and have. What kind of skills do you want to be? What kind of experiences do you want to do? And what kind of possessions do you want to have? And then calculate how much it will cost you per month to achieve your dream. Now, lesson two is write down your fears. This brings relief of our hesitation and self-doubt. I have a question for you. What stops us from going after the life we really want? I mean, some people do have real responsibilities and they can't just quit their job today. Like a mother or a father need to provide for their child. That's their most important obligation, over and above any dreams of sitting on a beach. But more often than not, it is fear that's the most powerful reason for our hesitation. We are afraid of failing, afraid of looking stupid, afraid of wasting our time and energy on something that doesn't work in the end. We're most of all afraid to lose what we have and all that we've built so far, a life that may provide security and comfort, and we are afraid to step into the unknown. Now, perhaps my favorite book ever is called The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, which is actually a book of poetry. In that book, the character, which is a wise prophet, is talking to a crowd of listeners, and he says, "Tell me, have you peace, memories, and beauty in your houses? Or have you only comfort and the lust for comfort, that stealthy thing that enters the house a guest, and then becomes a host, and then a master? Truly, the lust for comfort murders the passion of the soul, and then walks grinning in the funeral." End quote. And we're going to have a summary of that book, The Prophet by Khalil Gibran, coming in the future. Now, the good news is that Tim Ferriss found a way to decrease his fears. It was kind of an accident. His method is to write down his fears in very clear detail. And that clarity of knowing exactly what the worst scenario is, what the worst thing that could happen is, seemed to reduce the size of his fears very well. It worked for him, so maybe it can work for us too. To really understand this technique, I think it's useful to know more of Tim's story. You see, many years ago, his first online business had taken off, that sports supplement company, and he was getting tons of sales, but he was also working 12 hours a day, trying to keep everything running, and very afraid that it would all collapse without his constant involvement. And then one day, feeling completely overwhelmed with stress, Tim was inspired to actually write down his worst fears. What was the worst thing that he feared would happen? And those included lawsuits and bankruptcy and losing everything. But as he was writing, a strange thing happened. He actually started to feel better. With his fears clarified on the paper, Tim's brain saw that he would survive even those worst situations, and he could usually figure out ways to handle them. And so, after he did that exercise, he immediately bought a one-way plane ticket and took off on a worldwide adventure, which eventually lasted 15 months. His business was just fine, and he felt amazing. And that's why Tim recommends that we all stop waiting for someday to live our dreams, and he says, quote, "Just do it and correct course along the way," end quote. Speaking of fear, let me share with you a story that, or something that really changed my life as a young man. You see, I grew up with very crippling social anxiety. Like, I couldn't even look a person in the eyes, and even going into a convenience store, my armpits would be drenched in nervous sweat. It was that bad. And then I stumbled onto an incredible idea. That courage is not a lack of fear, but it's about feeling afraid and then taking action anyway. And so I began doing that. Instead of avoiding social interactions because of my anxiety, I began going towards my fears. I made myself look people in the eye despite feeling anxious. I practiced talking longer with kids at school instead of running away. And over time, by going towards that feeling of discomfort, anxiety, and fear, my anxiety eventually dissolved to a more normal level. And in fact, pretty much all the official psychotherapies for anxiety disorders follow that principle, the principle of voluntary exposure to what one fears. Emotionally, that is incredibly difficult to do, but it does work and it transforms you, taking action despite the fear. So that's another tool we can use to tackle our fears. Now, to summarize this lesson from the book, our fears, doubts, and hesitations can often be dissolved by writing down clearly what are the worst things that could happen. On paper, our fears tend to lose their power because we see that we'll survive. Ferris used this technique to relieve his extreme stress about his business failing. Now, lesson 3 is the 80-20 rule. You can work less and accomplish more at the same time. So the 80-20 rule says that 80% of our results in almost anything come from 20% of the inputs. It's also called the Pareto principle because it was actually an Italian scientist named Pareto who first observed this rule in his garden plants. He saw that 20% of his pea plants produced 80% of the peas, and later on people were surprised to discover the rule applies to almost anything in nature and life. Like 20% of people have 80% of wealth, 20% of basketball players shoot 80% of the points in the games. Whatever you want to look at, it usually follows this rule. And this idea is very useful for business and most careers, because generally speaking, 80% of our profits come from 20% of our customers, 80% of our sales come from the top 20% of our salespeople, and even 80% of our productivity happens during 20% of our work time, and so on and so on. So Tim Ferriss was able to transform his supplement business from a prison to a source of freedom simply by understanding and applying that 80-20 rule. So first, he found that 80% of his profits were coming from a handful of large wholesale customers who made big orders and didn't complain too much. So what he did was he got rid of many of his bad customers, those who ordered a little bit and sent in tons of customer support tickets. He got rid of those people, and then he focused on finding more of those big, good, profitable wholesale customers. And in just a few weeks after doing that, his income doubled to an incredible $60,000 per month. You see, most of us wrongly believe that in order to be more successful and productive, we must work harder. But Ferris says it's more important that we do the right things, those 20% of activities that cause 80% of results. Then we can both work less and earn more. And this is especially important if you're doing something with making a business. In my own online business experience, I've always followed a similar idea. I find what is working well, and then I focus on doing that and nothing else. You know, let's say I launch a new website to get traffic from Google. Well, maybe I write 10 or 20 articles, and those articles have a wide variety of styles because I'm still finding out what works. But then, once a couple of those articles start to receive traffic from Google, then I think those are the winners, and then I try to analyze why those articles work, and I make more similar to that. You know, perhaps I chose the right topic for the article, or I picked the right headline to get clicks. The most successful content creators spend all their time thinking about stuff like this. They look at the 20% of things that are working successfully, and then they try to do more like that and less of the 80% that aren't getting so many results. Investors also follow the 80-20 rule. I'm sure you've heard of the book Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. It's a mega best-selling book on finance and investing. Kiyosaki tells the story of how he learned to become wealthy from his friend's father, who was actually a successful business owner he nicknamed Rich Dad. And the most important lesson he learned from Rich Dad is that the poor and middle class work for money. The rich, on the other hand, have money work for them. And that all comes back to working harder versus doing the right things. The middle class people think, I'll get more money by working longer or harder. While rich people, they don't work harder than middle class people, but they do take different actions. They take the right actions. And what are those actions? Well, it's having their money work for them through buying assets that will produce more money. So I'll repeat that. They buy assets that will then produce more money and more income. Assets such as public stocks or real estate. It's kind of like they're buying trees that will provide them fruits long into the future. So they focus on that rather than working harder and harder. And you can learn a lot of great stuff in our summary of the book Rich Dad Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. To summarize the third lesson, the 80-20 rule says that 80% of our results come from 20% of our work time or customers or employees or whatever. So we need to find what's working best, focus on that exclusively, and get rid of everything else. And then our results will shoot up without us needing to work harder. Just like Tim fired the majority of his customers, but then doubled his income. Now lesson four is create passive income. Building an online business that provides extraordinary freedom. Do you want to start your own online business, especially one that provides passive income? Well, then keep listening, because Tim's classic book, this one, contains some of the best advice I've ever read for new entrepreneurs. So the first thing we need to understand is most businesses do not provide freedom for their owners. In fact, many entrepreneurs become trapped by their own creations. They end up needing to work much longer hours than a 9-to-5 job and feeling a lot more stressed than ever before. How can we avoid that happening to us? Well, we need to pick a type of business that can lead to a 4-hour work week. So here are four businesses that Tim Ferriss recommends. First are information products, such as making courses, books, etc. Even if you're not an expert on any subject right now, you could be more knowledgeable with a few weeks or months of dedicated study, and then you can almost definitely create a course that is valuable to people. The secret is you can make something for beginners, or you could specialize in a very specific topic that nobody has covered before. Tim recommends this kind of business the most because it doesn't require a lot of money to start. In fact, that was my first type of online business too. I had courses teaching people communication and social skills. Now, the second type of business is physical products. This is about having an idea for a product, then getting in touch with manufacturers to create it. And I know what we're all thinking. That sounds way too complicated and expensive. But it doesn't need to be. For Tim's first supplement business, he paid just $5,000 to produce his first order of supplement bottles. He simply contacted the company, I think it was in China, and he told them what ingredients to put in, and the company did everything else and mailed the bottles to him in America. So $5,000 is like a fraction, a tiny amount of money compared to what it takes to start most businesses, like even a local cafe. The third type of business he recommends is reselling, which is selling the products of other companies. For example, there's something called dropshipping, where you set up a website that takes orders, and when you make a sale on your website, the order is automatically sent to the company to fulfill it. This can be the fastest business to set up, but it can also be difficult because it's hyper-competitive with low profit margins. I mean, because it's easy for us to do, it's also easy for other people to do and to copy this kind of business. Related to reselling is affiliate marketing, where we can make sales commissions by sending people directly to a company's websites through our unique link. And when somebody buys that company's products through our referral link, then we make some money. So for example, Amazon has a program like this. You can send people to Amazon, and if they buy something like a book, you make a few percentage sales commission of the sale. Now, the fourth type of business is licensing. Some people earn very good royalties by giving companies permission to use their intellectual property. This could include book authors, music artists, maybe photographers selling stock photography, or product inventors. Or, a little bit different idea, you could also find people who have a good brand and then pay them a licensing royalty to create products with a built-in demand. I think Masterclass.com has done that idea wonderfully. Like, they have courses with Gordon Ramsay teaching cooking, Bill Clinton teaching leadership, and Tony Hawk teaching skateboarding. So licensing, you could either create some kind of intellectual property to license to others, or find someone who has a good brand and then do some kind of collaboration. So let's move on now to another critical decision that we need to make about starting a business, and that is what topic we should focus on with our business. Aspiring entrepreneurs often hear that they should follow their passion or do what they love. Tim Ferriss doesn't say those cliched lines, but he does recommend choosing a topic that we are very familiar with. The best way to create a product that other people will want to buy is to be a member of the target market ourselves. And that's why Tim's first business was a supplement that improved mental focus, targeted towards students and athletes. Because he was a part of both of those groups, so he knew exactly what those people were looking for, what kind of ingredients they would be looking for in a supplement, he knew what magazines they would be reading that he could advertise in, and so on. There's a lot of great benefits to being part of your market so that you really understand it. Now, there's another really great book for people wanting to launch an online business, and that one is The Millionaire Fast Lane by MJ DeMarco. That author was working a job as a limousine driver, and he had no money, and he was trying to think of a business idea. And then one day, a customer asked him how he could book a limousine in a different city that he was flying to. And MJ DeMarco realized there was no solution for that problem yet, and that gave him the idea to create an online website where people could easily book limousine rentals all over the country, and that made him very wealthy. And he totally rejects the idea that we need to be passionate about the topic of our business. I mean, he didn't care at all about limousines, he just wanted to get rich with a business. And so MJ DeMarco wrote, "Stop thinking about business in terms of your selfish desires, whether it's money, dreams, or do what you love. Instead, chase needs, problems, pain points, service deficiencies, and negative emotions," end quote. In other words, we can often get the best business ideas not by dreaming about what do we love, but by doing some detailed market research, whether it's talking to people in person, like he did, or reading what people are complaining about online. We can check online forums, social media groups, Amazon reviews of existing products, find those needs and problems that people have, and then solve them. You can learn more great business advice in our summary of his book, The Millionaire Fast Lane by MJ DeMarco on growth.me. But to summarize the fourth lesson, some of the best types of businesses for passive income include selling information products, or getting a physical product manufactured, or reselling other companies' products, or even licensing intellectual property. Try to choose a market that you're a part of, and then do a lot of research on what people in the market need. Lesson 5 is, test your idea. Check if people want your product before you make it. Have you ever seen that TV show Shark Tank? Well, what happens is, entrepreneurs come onto the show, and they present their new business ideas to a panel of experienced investors. And while they're presenting the idea, they always look like so confident that their idea is sure to be successful. But most often they leave disappointed with the harsh feedback they receive from those experienced investors. You see, I think entrepreneurs tend to be over-optimistic. If they weren't, then they would never try to be an entrepreneur, which is probably the riskiest of all professions. They'd just go be an accountant or a skydiving instructor or something. You see, the truth is, no matter how we feel, we never know if our product idea is really good until we try to sell it. As Tim Ferriss writes, don't ask people if they would buy, ask them to buy. And that means we shouldn't be asking our friends and family if our product idea is good. They'll usually say, yeah, it sounds good, or they don't even know. What we should do is go out to our target customer and ask them to buy, to hand over their money for the product. And it is actually possible to do that even before we've made the actual product. Tim Ferriss learned this lesson the hard way. In university, he created an audiobook, and then he paid for 500 copies of it to be manufactured, but then he couldn't sell it at all. Later on, he did a different approach, which is he put up posters all over the university campus advertising a seminar for speed reading, and then he ended up selling like $1,500 worth of spots in that seminar before he had even presented it. So that's selling the product before he made it. So to test our ideas, here's a super short overview of the method that Tim explains in his book. Step one is to create our own sales page in 1 to 3 hours after researching some similar existing websites. So take a look at what kind of products are out there that are similar, and then offer something like that on your own web page. Step two is to send visitors to that page and paying no more than $500 to $1,000 for Google ads or maybe Facebook ads. You could do that today. Step three is to measure the response. You could use the free app Google Analytics to measure your website traffic and to see how many people are clicking the buy button when they visit your sales page, so to visit the checkout page. And step four is on your second checkout page, put a notice that the product is out of stock since you don't actually have the product yet. But we can assume that most people who did click that button on your sales page to buy and then they tried to go to the checkout page, we can assume most of those people were serious about buying. So that is his method of testing a product idea. Now I'm going to connect this to another book called The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. I think this book is the most often recommended one to aspiring startup founders, and it's called The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. The author of that book failed in business twice before launching a very popular 3D messaging app called IMVU. And he says startups usually fail because they waste a lot of time creating a product, only to later find out months or years later that nobody wants it. And the solution in that book is to create a very basic version of our product idea as fast as possible, which is called a minimum viable product. And then we improve the product rapidly based on real-world testing, user feedback, and also metrics. It's about learning as we go, learning what our target customers really want in a product based on their actions. And I think that book is best if you want to do like an app. That's where the advice will be most relevant. And that's called The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. We have a summary on growth.me. But to summarize lesson four, you must first try to sell your product idea before you really know if it's viable. Tim's method is to quickly create a basic sales page, then send targeted visitors to it, spending no more than $1,000 on advertising. If a lot of visitors make it to the checkout page, then your idea shows promise. Now, lesson six is remove distractions, cutting out useless noise and content consumption. In the technology industry, it seems the magic word is engagement. You see, some of the smartest people in the world are now spending all their days trying to keep people as engaged on their apps as possible. And what that really means is making us spend maximum hours per week using their product, whether that is YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, Netflix, PlayStation, or even the New York Times. Why? Because they make most of their profits from advertising, so the longer our eyeballs stay glued to their platform, the more dollars they make. As a very smart person once said, if it's free, then you're not the customer, you're the product. But the real cost is our attention, our productivity, our mental well-being, and in the long term, our dreams. And that's why Tim Ferriss says we should go on a low-information diet. And that means cutting out any unnecessary consumption of content or information. A few of his general guidelines include cutting back on email. Most jobs don't require us to be always connected. You could try switching to checking emails twice per day, and then Tim recommends once per day. Another tip, don't watch the news. If something truly important happens, you'll hear about it from people around you anyway. And a final tip, learn how-to information as you need it. Learning endlessly just in case we'll someday need some knowledge, that is a common way to avoid real action. So learn information just before you need to use it to in your business. Now there's another amazing book on productivity called Deep Work by Cal Newport, and he's a computer science professor and researcher, and he also makes that point that the modern world is pushing us towards constant distraction, nonstop notifications, and shallow emptiness. His solution is called deep work. That means setting aside large blocks of time every day, free of interruptions, to do the work that requires deep focus and mental effort, the work that really pays off for our future. As he wrote, clarity about what matters provides clarity about what does not, end quote. And that means if we set aside time, specifically for our most important, meaningful, and productive work, then we can escape the digital noise that causes so many problems for people today. And you can also check out our summary of his book, Deep Work by Cal Newport, on growth.me. But to summarize this lesson, going on a low-information diet means eliminating the distractions that are useless and irrelevant to our future dreams. That means checking email once per day, not consuming news, and learning how to information only as we need it, and also setting aside dedicated time blocks for working deeply without distraction. Okay, finally we have lesson 7, aim for excitement. Stay engaged with interesting projects, adventures, and hobbies. To me, the words passive income bring up an image of someone lying on a beach, lazily sipping an alcoholic drink, like a margarita. But for most of us, a life like that will get boring very fast. And so Tim Ferriss says he aims for excitement. That's essentially his life philosophy when he wrote that book. He believes that people feel best when they're engaged with life and moving towards meaningful goals. And that is why he's always actively working on new projects, despite having those orange palm trees on the cover of his own book. He doesn't spend a lot of time laying around in a hammock. Tim has written multiple books with 400 plus pages each. He's interviewed hundreds of people on his podcast, and he's been involved in 50 startups and all sorts of other projects. As someone who founded a business called Growth.me, I fully agree with Tim here. I've always felt best when I was growing towards the direction of my goals. And also, the great psychologist Viktor Frankl once wrote, "What man actually needs is not a tensionless state, but rather the striving and struggling for a worthwhile goal, a freely chosen task," end quote. So here are three of Tim's favorite ways to aim for excitement. Number one is continuous learning. Always be learning some new skill, hobby, or language. Tim has been involved in countless sports and hobbies, like wrestling, dancing, hunting, etc. When he travels to new countries, he tries to learn some of the language, and in some cases, he tries to learn the language to become fluent in it. Now, a second tip is to find a full-time vocation. That means working on something we really find interesting or fulfilling. Today, Ferriss admits he often works much longer than 40 hours per week, but the difference is he's doing what he wants to do, and that's called a vocation. And a third technique is mini retirements. That means taking 1 month to 6 months off to do something you've always dreamed of. Ride a boat down the Amazon, visit cathedrals in France, take courses in a local cooking school. It's kind of like spacing your retirement out over your whole life, rather than waiting until we're over 65 years old to try to cram everything in. And these mini retirements will obviously work best if you have some kind of passive income business, or if you have a remote job, something you can work from your laptop anywhere. And those jobs are becoming a lot more common. So to summarize the final lesson, despite the title of this book, Tim Ferriss says, being passive is a sure road to discontent for most people. So the best aim is excitement, and that comes from always learning new things, being involved in fulfilling work, and taking time off to cross items off our bucket list, our list of what we dream to do. So let's finish up with some practical, actionable steps for how we could apply this book to our lives. Action step number one is calculate your TMI, target monthly income. So write down a list of what you want in the next 3 to 5 years, and then find out how much would all of that cost. Remember, it's what you want to be, what you want to do, and what you want to have, and let your imagination run wild. Perhaps it'll end up costing you $10,000 per month, or maybe $20,000 per month or more. Maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised that it doesn't cost as much as you thought. To go travel around Asia, for example, it's much cheaper than most people would think, and in many parts of the world. So once you have the number, don't worry about how you're going to achieve it yet. Just get the concrete number down on paper, and now you have a specific, definite aim to shoot for. Okay, action step number two is to write down your top three interests and then one information product idea for each interest. This is obviously if you don't have a business yet and if you're trying to come up with a business idea that you can start. So write down your top three interests and then one information product idea for each interest. To find your top interests, you could look at what arrives in your email inbox, like what do you get a lot of marketing emails about, or what do you spend the most money on in your credit card statement? Like if you just spend a few hundred dollars on golf clubs, that could be your top interest. And then once you have that list of interests, research what people need related to that topic. Check Reddit or in other online forums, see what products or books are already selling on Amazon, find out what's already popular. And don't worry if someone has already done the idea that you are thinking of, because sometimes competition can be a good thing. If somebody's already made a product, it means there's some demand for it and people are probably buying it. So all you need to do is execute better and make a slightly better product or something that's a little different in some way. Okay, our final action step number three is to create a sales page for one of your ideas. Okay, so this one may take a bit longer, an afternoon at least, but it's still a lot faster than making a product and later finding out nobody wants it. So there's a great guide online for creating a sales or a landing page, which is published by Lead Pages. So you can find a link to that on the written version of this summary. But that's a respected online marketing technology company. It's called Lead Pages. And they say a good sales page contains 5 major elements. That is a unique selling proposition, a call to action, an offer, strong visuals, and supporting evidence. So if you do this action step, I strongly recommend checking out that free guide by Lead Pages. And today, a lack of technical skills, that shouldn't hold anyone back from publishing a sales page, because now there are countless drag and drop platforms that we could use to publish a simple web page online fast. Those are tools like Unbounce, Lead Pages, Instapage, and there are many more. I like to use WordPress, but that takes a little bit more knowledge to set it up at first. And once you have the page online, the next step is to send targeted visitors to that page. And for that step, you'll want to research tutorials and courses on Google Ads or Facebook Ads. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed this book summary, and I'll see you in the next one.